Welcome to Dad Life with Foz. My name's Luke Forrest, aka Foz. Alongside my beautiful partner Emily, I'm about to become a new dad, and I have absolutely no idea what I'm doing. So instead of doing the research privately, I thought I'd invite some of my mates along who've done this all before. And hopefully, along the way, I'm going to work out what the hell I'm doing when this baby is born. Just a quick shout out to Royal Stacks, who give us this little podcast booth. So for any up-and-coming podcasters, get in here in Moorabbin. Danny and the team down here, amazing job down here. So get down for some burgers and some beers. We've got Jack helping us out today. Byron's, he's stuck on a bus.
Yeah, he's on a bus. I'm the new anchor man.
He's the anchor.
I'm replacing the iconic Byron Cook.
I know.
I've got the same resume as him, so it's all good. we're on the same level, 21-year-old man.
That's it. So Jack will be helping us out today. And our third guest. Now, the first time I noticed Scotty was on a show. It was basically a rip-off of Sailor Sentry Temptation, wasn't it?
Thanks for ringing that up.
He's basically, but you probably know him as Detective Mark Brennan off Neighbours, and now basically I think he's on the dole and a full-time golfer.
That's it.
Scott McGregor.
You could call me a stay-at-home dad.
Well, yeah.
Daddy daycare or something, but yeah, that'll do. Yeah. Thanks, Forrest.
You managed to get out on the golf course a bit these days, though.
Yeah, probably too much for someone who's got two kids.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We might touch on that a little bit later.
Yeah. I thought you might.
Now, seeing as this is a dad podcast and my beautiful girlfriend, Em, she's 18 weeks at the moment doing a fantastic job at home, I thought I'd get Scotty in, who's now had two kids. So this is new ground for us.
Yes.
Because Maxie's only got one. Josh has only got one.
Yep. And I'll be honest with you, I've listened to the Maxie episode and you've told me about Josh's. And with all due respect to the boys, I was listening to it thinking, boys, yeah, just hold on. Nothing's happened yet. Just wait. And there'd be dads out there that are listening to me thinking, mate, your kids are 4 and 2. You just wait. Yeah. So it's all a matter of perspective, right?
Maxie was very blasé with the whole thing, wasn't he?
Yeah. Oh, my God. I was listening to it thinking, if I say half the stuff he says, I'm in trouble.
Oh, yeah, I've had numerous texts from mates and that saying, not sure how he gets away with that.
Yeah, he's doing absolutely. All right. So, hey, but if you can, why not?
Now, as a man, how long have you been with Bianca for now?
10 years or 10 thereabouts.
Years. And how old were you when you and Bianca thought, and when did you know that you wanted kids? Have you always known that you wanted kids from when you were 8?
Yeah, I've always wanted kids. But, like, you know, so I was a really young uncle. So I was I'm the youngest of 5. And when I was 9, my sister had her first at 20. So I was an uncle at 9, and I kind of – and then I've lost count, but I've got, I don't know, maybe 12, 13, 14 nieces and nephews. And I've kind of grown up around kids, and I've always known that I've wanted them, but I definitely didn't, you know, you want kids with the right person.
Correct.
You
really yeah. Do. I was waiting for that because I've been married and divorced and that. Yep. So that's great. No, he's really good. And it's funny, as soon as I met Em, something in my mind clicked, and I thought I can have kids with this girl.
Absolutely,
you know? So
which is what you want.
Unless it's an accident.
That's right.
But and when did so you and Bianca obviously had the convo, and was it hard for you guys to fall pregnant? Well, you had to go through the IVF journey, which is a little bit more difficult.
I've got a few friends who have been through the same thing, so I kind of know a lot about it and how tough it can be. But no, look, we bought a place together. We bought our house together, and when you go down that path, it's, you know, we weren't married at that stage or engaged. So when we first moved in together, I proposed, but we weren't in a rush to get married either. So we just discussed having kids and sort of said to each other, look, it could take a while. Let's just try, I guess. Yeah, have a crack. Yeah. And so we did. And then Bianca fell pregnant before we kind of could plan a wedding. So we put the wedding off and just went, doesn't matter.
Beautiful.
And concentrated on, Bianca and the first pregnancy. And then we had little Evie. And so then we got married after having Evie, which was really cute. But now we sort of feel sorry for Jackson.
Well, that's going to happen with me and Em now, because we're going to have a kid before we get married, we get married. Yeah, but we'll see. Now, talk us through some issues that there may be during the pregnancy. I mean, we touched on it privately, but you had an issue with Evie's brain, was it?
Yeah, so, it was really odd in that, you know, you – what was weird for us was that there's certain scans that you are told that you need to do, but then for some reason, I think Bianca was just very, at one point she thought, she just had a feeling that something had gone wrong. So we went to hospital and, you know, it's a nerve-wracking time when it's all the unknown, I guess.
Yeah.
And so she wanted to do another, ultrasound just to see the baby again. And I was like, what are we doing? I think I told you it was 30 weeks, but it was actually 36 weeks.
So okay, so really late, yeah.
Really late.
I mean, Jack, you're young, but these scans are nerve-wracking.
No, I can imagine, especially once you get in your own head like that, then it's like game over.
Yeah, and like, you know, when you're looking up at a screen and you're seeing heartbeats and stuff, it just blows you away. So we're sitting there and I could tell that the doctor, who was really quite well-renowned, was being a bit weird, and then he sat us down afterwards and basically said, I've picked up on something in the brain that's not quite right. And there's basically all these ventricles. They're called ventricles. They're kind of just little spaces in the brain that are, and when they measure them, they're meant to measure at a certain, measurement. And one was off. And so you can imagine, like, Bianca didn't sleep for a week. And so we had to book in to go. And he said, look, you know, maybe go and get a second opinion at the Royal Children's. And so we booked in, but had to wait a week. And, you know, it was tough, mate.
Nuts. And what about Jackson? Was that a pretty
So the Jackson one. So again, I think keep in mind, right? Like we've come a long way in medicine, but there's still a lot of unknown. So as an example, just to take you back quickly with the whole ventricle and the brain thing, what they've realised now, and when we did a scan, we did a CT, I think we did it at the Royal Children's, they came in and said to us, what we're realising is we've got all this information and we don't know what to do with it. So what we're finding out is it's actually just, it's part of normal. It's like, it's slightly abnormal, but it's still in the normal range.
Yep.
Like if there's something's really wrong, then we know that it's really wrong. But it's not, what we're finding out is what Evie's got is, there's one in four kids with the same thing.
Okay.
But because it's new to us and we're finding out more and more, they're kind of scrambling to understand what's right and wrong or abnormal and normal.
Yeah, well, it's similar to when we were trying to have kids. We were obviously getting tests done and everything, and everything was coming back normal until they found out that now don't quote me on this because I'm not a scientist, but my actual chromosomes, I think you've got 36 in your whole body, one of them's on the outside.
Right.
So how am I alive? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, it's abnormal. And it wasn't, but that may have been the reason that we couldn't fall pregnant.
Yeah.
But then we did IVF and it was perfectly fine.
And this is the thing, you know, like I remember speaking to mum and dad about it. And as I said, I'm one of five. And mum was like, don't worry about it. And I'm like, what do you mean? And they're like, well, we didn't have these scans when you just go and have a kid. And like they come out how they come out. And you know, you do have to remind yourself of that. And then I think I mentioned Jackson as well. We found out he had this, it's called a trisomy, where I kind of forget the ins and outs of it, but basically there was one extra chromosome.
Okay.
But that's from a certain test, right? So then you have to go on to really hit it on the head and find out exactly what it is. They had to do it's similar to an amniocentesis.
So it's a big needle, isn't it?
They pull this needle out. And I remember saying to the doctor, hang on, how does it go in? And he goes, pull straight in the stomach.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, B had to lie down and massive needle this big straight in her stomach. And while they're ultrasounding to make sure they're hitting the right spot, but not only are they, you know, your baby's in there, right?
Yeah.
And when you pierce the amniotic sac, there's a chance that things can go wrong and they can split. But what they did is they actually take out a piece of the amniotic fluid, which has got a lot of DNA in it, but the placenta has so much more DNA in it, which is really about the child. So that's what they did. They took out a bit of that and they test it and come back and go, it's normal. And you're like, what have I been worrying about then? It's like the most stressful moments of your life.
So they weren't by far the easiest pregnancies because you had a few worries along the way.
In terms of Bianca, she didn't really have any sickness or anything else. But, it was horrible to go through. But looking back, we're just so thankful that, they're so healthy and happy.
Now, this is a question I ask everyone because it's a touchy subject in our household. Yeah. Birthing classes. Did you do them?
We did.
Okay.
Yeah, we did. And Look,
beneficial, or you could have done it yourself on the internet?
This is the way I looked at it, right? Like, I, even though I felt like I knew a lot about kids, I just wanted to be as ready as possible. And there's a lot of things that you're doing, like these courses, right, that you do and you think, oh, my God, did I need to do that? Probably not. But if you can take one thing out of it, I don't know. Look, I think the answer is if you feel like you don't want to do it, just don't. But, you know, like if your wife wants you there, do it.
Yeah. That's pretty much with everything in life, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah. Now, it's all about getting aces up your sleeve, mate.
Yeah. Right?
I was going to say, it's one of the big things about, and I'm sure Bianca wouldn't mind me saying it, is like, I feel like the best thing that I can do is, like, you know, allow her to do. So she's huge on fitness. She runs, you know, three times a week, and she'll always say, hey, do you mind if I go for a run tomorrow morning, which means I've got to look after the kids. And I go, absolutely not, because I know that when I need to lean on you and say, hey, can I go the range and hit some balls, that she'll say yes. Yeah, and that's what it's about.
Yeah, it's so, about compromise.
Yeah, absolutely.
And everyone always says that, but it never a truer word has been spoken about a relationship.
Absolutely.
And you got a girlfriend? You got a girlfriend?
I do. Yeah. 19, though, so we're not worrying about kids.
Nah, I wouldn't be worrying about
more,
yet.
More worrying about matching up the university schedules, seeing what classes are when and who has placement when. That's the biggest issue at the moment.
That's a good problem to have.
What I do to be 19 again. But anyway. Now let's fast track a little bit to the day of the birth.
Yeah.
Was there anything that shocked you or you weren't expecting? Now, Evie was a C-section.
Yeah, they both were.
Oh, both were C-sections,
So they're both what's called frank breech, and breech, as you know, is upside – well, it's sitting upright, which is upside down, right, because it's meant to be head down. But Evie and Jackson were actually – it's called frank breech, where it's basically bum down, head up, and the feet are up near your head. So they're in like a hamstring stretch, which is really weird. But I think the doctors said it's just it's got to do with the way that your uterus is you know – Bianca's uterus was that's how the kid ends up in there.
So she
had to, there's no way she would have been able to have either naturally. C-section for both. But I think
what's that feeling when you first see, like, specifically your firstborn, because that was your first, but
oh mate,
what's the feeling
like? I can't
cry?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Makes me want to cry now.
Yeah.
incredible, but I just don't know if words can do it justice. It just blows you away that you're meeting this little version of you and her that is just like you're forever. You know, like they're going to be your best mate and they're going to be everything from here on in.
So with a C-section, it's very planned, isn't it?
Like it is. So it does have. So I've got a mate, and plenty of mates that have had both. And so one of my best mates, his first child was natural, second one Caesar, and he was just like it's like you're booking in to have your teeth done or something. Like you go in there,
or a vasectomy.
Exactly. So like it's all planned, and the doctors are like talking about the football or whatever they're talking about, and it's like very, it's odd. You know, there's no screaming, but it is nerve wracking. And even just getting the needle in the back for the women, they don't let you in there because they say if men are going to pass out, if a partner's going to pass out, it's then when they see the needle go in the back and stuff. So they keep you out, and then they come out and get you and say, come on in, and they're into it. And there's like a little, they call it a curtain. It's like a little curtain up so you can't see what's going on the other side. I didn't want to see. I reckon I would have passed out.
I'd be happy not to see.
So my job obviously was just to stay up, you know, with B and talk to her
And how was she? She was pretty strong through the whole thing.
She's great.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
One thing I'll say about it is it's really odd that there's all this pushing and pulling, right? And then they're not, you know, they're quite rough.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Bianca's kind of being moved around and stuff, and I'm talking to her holding her hand, and it's really weird because you know that they're doing stuff over there that you just don't want to see. And then there's like a burning smell in your wallet, and it's like, and you see like some like smoke over there, and you're like, what's going on down there?
This is like I'm rubbing a stick together.
Yeah. They're doing God knows. But I remember asking the doctor, I said, can I ask you, what is that burning smell? And so they're like, basically, it stops the blood, you know, it's like putting a seal on the cut so they don't bleed.
Yeah.
Which is just odd. You know, things like that, that you're just thinking, what is going on? And then with Evie, at one point, they were like, you know, and they're talking to you and they're saying, you know, she's nearly out, or he or she, we knew it was a girl. So she's nearly out, and then they just started piecing themselves laughing.
Yeah.
And we kind of looked at each other, and Bianca was surprised. And you know, not a bad sign, but like, what are you laughing at? And then we asked them what happened, and she said, oh, because she came out bum first, the doctor had to kind of squeeze her together to get her out.
Whoa.
And she just shit everywhere. So the doctor ended up with Evie shit all over.
What a job. That should be a pretty rewarding job, I reckon.
Amazing, yeah. Funnily enough, I was at a cafe I had Jackson by this stage, and I was at a cafe, and this woman was coming out with a pram, and I held the door open for her, and she said, thank you. And she said, I actually delivered your baby. And I said, what? And then it twigged, and I remembered her, and I said, yeah, my God, you did. And she had just given birth herself to her first child, and we spoke, and she talked about my daughter's birth, and I was just, it was like 5 minutes of, like, just mind-blowing that this girl, this woman who was an incredible woman, mind you, was, like, one of the heads, one of the head obstetricians at the Royal Women's. It was just walking out of a cafe and said, oh, I delivered your baby. He's like, what?
Do you want to hear more mind-blowing?
What's that?
My girlfriend's grandfather delivered my mum.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
That is
Nana, when she met Tess, my girlfriend, put two and two together, ran and got the birth certificate, called me up and go, is this his name? Oh, my God, he delivered your mum. How's that?
That's nuts. That is freaky. Yeah, that is freaky. Now, what about when everything's sort of settled from the birth and you get home and you're stuck there with this thing that you don't really know what to do with?
You'd be amazed at the support you get. Like, as an example.
I was going to say, how important are grandparents? Like,
I mean, hugely, but, you know, it's incredible that, you know, you get, even in the, you know, public system, you get, what are they called, midwives that come around and check on you. And they check on things like make sure your setup's good. Like, they'll go in and check your change table and give you advice. And it's an incredible system, I've got to say. And you get this little green book that's got all the things. Like, if you need to check something, you go to your little green book and you write it all down. And, you know, they come and weigh them. And just so there is, you know, I feel sorry for people who don't have grandparents. We're really lucky to have Bianca's parents around the corner. So that's lovely.
And what's the biggest, what's the biggest sacrifice you gave away? I mean, it's obviously not golf because you're still playing golf, but having a kid, like, what's the biggest thing that you miss, like, that you had to give up?
I mean, it's funny because I don't really feel like
missing anything.
I was ready for kids, so I don't feel like I was missing it. Like, if I don't get to play golf in a week, I'm not angry. I'm a dad now.
Are we sure?
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, I think maybe Bianca and I don't go out much anymore. We had a really nice night out not long ago. We don't really get babysitters, to be honest. Like, a lot of people do, and we're like, oh, we should probably do it more often, really, just because you've got to live your life still, and you've got to be able to, you know, you have so many, I don't want to call them arguments, but like with your missus that you're with your partner that, you know, you know that's all good intent, but you're going to have them.
It's probably a bit of tiredness and stuff like that that gets you.
Sleep's hard, you know, and you really got to help each other out with sleep.
Yeah.
But I think probably the biggest thing is, like, not being able to go, I'm going to do something and walk out the door. You know, that kind of disappears a bit because you're just always thinking about the kids.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now, I was speaking to someone else about postnatal depression and a little bit of baby blues and that. Is that anything Bianca suffered through or you guys suffered through?
Yeah. And I asked her if she would mind me talking about it, and she doesn't.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that I feel as though it's crazy that it's not spoken about more because, it gets you.
I've got a few friends, partners that have been through it as well. Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's like depression on steroids. It really is. Yeah. Like, you can imagine. And you know, I think too, I haven't really looked into it, but there is a male version of baby blues because they're trying to, you know, we're trying to deal with, you know,
the change.
I had to keep reminding myself that she had the baby blues.
Yeah.
And so it's, look, a lot of women struggle that much with baby blues that they can actually reject the baby. Mm. And Bianca didn't get to that.
Okay.
But that's how bad it can get.
And how long did it go on for after, do you reckon?
Oh, I want to say at least, I want to say at least, I'd be guessing here, and Bianca will probably get upset. Yeah. Like, I want to say, you know, 6 months, but like breastfeeding time can go on. Like, Bianca's still breastfeeding Jax, and he's almost two, right?
Okay.
Which is another touchy subject.
when does it stop? Like, when they can walk up and ask for it?
Exactly, probably. How's this? So when we got married, I've got this beautiful photo, which I just sums up my love for my wife and my children. The morning of our wedding, there was a photographer and she took this incredible photo of Bianca breastfeeding in her wedding dress.
I've seen it. Great photo. Yeah.
I put it up on Instagram or social media, and you would not believe the horrible comments floating around.
Oh, really?
Most people are great and they're like, what a great photo. And then we've had some people like, she's too old to be breastfed. Oh. And it's like, hang on a second. What?
Yeah,
no,
I know.
No, they're like, I don't know the answer to that question, but no.
I think it's a personal choice.
As long as you're not 30.
What helped with the baby? Like, what did you do to, I suppose, help with Bianca with those babies? Like, what did you do as support?
Mate, I think it's hard. It's like I just went by, like, just try and be there as much as possible. Try and be, don't leave the dishes out. Like, don't do stuff that it's just going to make everything harder. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. It's little things, but you do kind of feel helpless in a way, but I also felt like if it's just little things, it's just little things. And like, if the more I can help, the better it's going to be. But I think for me, it was like I got frustrated in not knowing what I was doing right or wrong. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Even the stuff that you think you're doing right can be wrong.
Yeah.
And I just had to keep reminding myself that, you know, she had all these, what do you call them?
Hormones.
Running through them. And so do you.
Yeah.
So it's just like, let's just take it a day at a time.
And was she different with Jackson? Was it?
She had a bit of baby blues. Yeah. I think it was worse with Evie though, first time around.
Now, I mean, this is not, I don't have to do this soon, but toilet training.
Yep. Tough.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what's the go? Is like a reward system a good way to do it?
We did that, but then there's like, you know, everyone's different. Like Evie was actually, she got scared of the toilet.
Okay.
And so this is like, you know, there's things I'm dealing with Jackson at the moment. He's kind of similar. He's like, I've sat him on the toilet and even just get them to sit on it.
Well, it's a big hole. Like if you're
So you're like, you know, usually you go to a potty first and then to get them into it. But I think it's really nice to be able to get them just used to things. So just talking to them about being a big boy or a big girl, sitting on it is like enough, even if they're still in the nappy. So that just gets them used to being on it. And then they're a bit more comfortable. And then, you know, eventually they kind of get it. And Evie, you know, thank God it was like, you know, she's been amazing. She's so smart and whatever else. She just took to it. And then once she got it, that was it. And we've never looked back.
Because I follow Maddie Wilson, who's on Neighbours, on Neighbours here. They've done the elimination technique. Is that right? Like no nappies at all.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
What I did know was, did you hear this one? They started putting the potty. They've got this beautiful window looking out over their garden near the kitchen sink. So they used to put the potty near the kitchen sink, right, for him to look outside so he'd be distracted. But then he would only go if it was near the kitchen sink. So they put him on the potty on the ground, he wouldn't go.
Yeah.
They had to be up near the kitchen sink.
So what elimination technique is they just have no nappies on the baby and they just rely on their senses. To pick them up. And which is amazing because you'd be cleaning up a lot.
I wouldn't go down that path. But hey, good on Matt.
Good for the environment.
No
nappies.
Yeah,
but it's a
nappy is your friend, mate.
Would it be though? Because I'd imagine you'd be doing a lot of washing, using a lot of water to clean stuff up.
True.
They'd cancel out.
I admire Matty. He does some interesting things. I love the way they parent. I should actually get him on the podcast. Actually, he'd be interesting to talk to as well.
Yeah, I was meant to.
I'll think it out loud.
Do it. Yeah. He'll do it for sure.
Now, have you had any dumb parenting moments?
Oh, plenty.
Yeah. any stick out?
Oh, dear. I mean, we all have them. And, like, I'm especially with Evie first time around, I've I'll admit I was a helicopter parent, which is just like, you know, you just don't want anything to go wrong and you hover over them and, you know, anything to stop them smashing their head into a corner of a table. So, like, I've always been a bit of that type of parent. But one night I went out and got a little bit drunk and I came home and Jackson just wasn't sleeping. And he was really – he was only months, I think, old.
What time was this, do you reckon, in the morning?
I would have been
– 1 a.m.?
Yeah, 1 a.m. thereabouts. And he just wouldn't stop crying. We were actually away. We were holidaying. And you know, we were staying with another couple. I didn't want his crying to wake up the other kids or the other parents. And I was like, I'll just put him on my chest. And which can be a real no-no because, you know, there's stories of like, you know, parents rolling over on their kids and suffocating them and stuff like that. And also them falling off. And my wife said to me, Bianca said to me, you're not sleeping with him on your chest. He'll fall off. And I said, no, he won't. He'll be right. And I fell asleep and I woke up to a thud. And granted, it wasn't a high bed.
Yeah.
But, you know, like he fell off and hit the ground. Yeah. And I remember thinking, I knew straight away what had happened. I picked him up and he had a bit of a cry. He was fine. Yeah. They're made of rubber.
They're tough.
And yeah, and I was just hoping that Bianca didn't wake up, but she was like, what happened? You didn't drop him, did you? And I was like, oh, no. Yeah, I dropped him. But no, he was fine. He had a little sook and I put him back to sleep. He was good.
Yeah.
Not my finest moment.
One thing I suppose with being a team parenting is discipline. And it's I suppose it's something that some people might have different opinions on. I was actually watching a TV show, not entirely sure which one it was, but it was talking about smacking kids.
Yes.
And I think there was about – I think about 8 out of the 10 couples had smacked their kid. And it's an interesting one because, I mean, everyone gets smacked. Yeah, I mean, our generation probably did.
Yep.
But being aligned with your partner on the disciplines, and there's a lot of – like there's positive parenting. You can do everything by, like, giving them a solution rather than telling them off.
Yep.
So if they do something wrong, if they break the glass, you say, look, Jackson, if you had have done it this way, this would have been done. Or you can obviously yell at them. But I suppose it's picking your times.
There's also, like, I think people forget too, right, like, and you'll learn this, that, you know, kids go through stages of, like, pushing boundaries. So as an example – there's this stage of like, and it was funny, I didn't realize until Jackson, and Evie used to do it, Jackson did it, when they're feeding and they're starting to eat and they're sitting in a high chair, they throw shit on the ground and it's incredibly annoying. They look at you and do it, but it's actually a bit of a growth phase and they will, you read books about it and stuff where they will say they're doing it, a lot of the time they're doing it for a reaction. So they're doing it on purpose. And even though, you know, you've had a hard day, it's the last thing you need is picking up more crap. But and it's, you know, you've got to try and remember that, you know, they're doing it. It's a bit of a growth thing and whatever else. So they, you know, they will push your boundaries like you have never been pushed by anyone. I'm telling you, you're about to... This is where I'm listening to these other guys. Yeah. I'm like, guys, honestly, just wait.
Yeah.
And then when the second one comes along, oh, my God, like times it by 10. It's nuts. They try and feed off each other. So I guess my point is like, yeah, it is – discipline's really hard. I would say – and again, I don't think Bianca would be upset with me saying this. I think she's soft.
Yeah.
And then there's things like, you know, when they go to daycare, it's not – they'll discipline them to a degree. Then, you know, obviously, not allowed to smack them and stuff. But they come home, they go to daycare and have fun, man. Mm. So they come home, they've had no discipline all day, and if they're not getting discipline from anyone, they just absolutely take the piss, and they will take it to the nth degree, mate. I'm telling you, it will. I don't think you realise. Like, there is no one on the planet that has pissed you off more than your kids are going to. And I guarantee there's parents out there that will hear that. They'll go, absolutely.
Collingwood Footy Club has pissed me off by losing 6 grand finals since I've been alive.
No, it's got nothing on what you're about to cop. So, look, I'm definitely the harder one of the two, and we've had huge chats about it. And I think my thing is that because Bianca and a lot of the people looking after our kids are kind of, that's not their job to discipline them, really. I find it harder to discipline because they're not getting it. You know what I mean?
But I suppose you've got to be the disciplinarian because you're the only ones that really can.
I mean, again, there'll be people out there that think, oh, you're an idiot. But, I mean, they're my kids.
Yeah,
I want them growing up with manners. Like, there's so many kids out there, they're so rude and, you know, Even, you know, there's like some of my nieces and nephews do things and I look at their parents like, are you going to do anything? And they could not care less. And I think my kid is not doing that.
Nah.
You say hello to everyone. You say thank you. You say your please.
Yeah.
And I'm going to drill that into my kids because it was drilled into me and I think it goes a long way in life. Mm.
No, I agree with you. Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Now, was there much of a difference between a boy and a girl? Like, so far, bringing them up? I mean, Evie's only, how old's Evie?
So she's four.
Oh, Jackson's two, yeah.
So. You get told certain things. Like, every kid's different. And
a lot of people say girls are easier early. But then once they get to 15, 16.
Well, obviously I'm not there yet. But I can imagine that's true for us. I mean, and as they say a bit, you know, it's little kids, little problems, big kids, big problems, which I'm scared about, right? Mm. Because when they hit the age of 15, 16, and I've got young cousins who are that age, you can see like social media and the stuff that is starting to affect them is potentially really bad, like really, really bad. So that's what I'm really nervous about going forward. But, yeah, for like, I mean, early days with Evie and stuff, I would say that, you know, you hear things like girls are easier in the respect that they're quicker learners. And I would say that that's true for Evie and Jackson. Like, Evie, I feel like I haven't even had to try. She's been amazing. She can now, like, she's, like, articulate and knows all these words that she probably shouldn't even know by now. And she's flying, right? But with Jackson, I feel like I need to try.
I think that's all guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now I'll go to some socials. We've got a couple of questions here for you.
Oh, yeah.
So shoot, go for it. We've almost answered this, but you can go again. How do you still manage to fit so much golf while being a dad?
Look, I think Bianca kind of knows that it's my outlet. And even though I might not get a full round in, I might say that, like, we'll put the kids down in summer and, you know, they might go to bed at 7 o'clock. You've still got an hour and a half of daylight. And I'll say, I'm going to go and hit balls at the range for a half hour. So that's a bit of an outlet for me. And she's got her outlet. She's super fit and loves running and stuff. So she'll get up and do 10K three times a week. But, you know, she understands that it's a bit of my outlet and that's what I've got. So if she can allow, if I can get it, then great.
How many rounds do you average a week?
Nah, like, at the moment, not even one, but...
Okay. Yeah. I don't trust you on that one.
Fair enough.
Anyway, next one. What is the most useful baby thing you bought and what's the most useless baby thing that you bought?
The most useful... can I tell you one thing that... So one thing that Bianca has loved and I've almost thrown it over the fence about 15 times is the baby monitor.
Oh,
I cannot stand it.
Yeah. All right.
Because they're in, like, I'm tipping that, you know, we don't have mansions. We can hear them. They're in the next room if they cry. We don't need it on full blast, right? While you can hear them yelling, like, it's just really, especially when you're sleeping, it just hits your brain in a different way. And what it is useful for is, say, if you want to go outside or, you know, you're out the back doing stuff, that's great. But, like, there's been times where I'm like, the baby monitor just...
So that's your most hated?
It's my most hated. Most useful.
Most loved.
Most loved. I mean, I was about to say, like, a dummy because it shuts them up.
That'll do. Now, this is a three-part question. Might be from someone that you know.
Yeah.
How often does Bianca get a sleep in? How many times have you ever done an overnight feed?
Oh, God.
And why does it take you so long to put Amy to bed?
Oh, God, I think I know who this is from, my darling wife. What was the first part? How
often does Bianca get a sleep in?
Not very often, but let's put a few things in perspective here. She's a morning person. I'm not.
Okay.
So she loves getting up early. I'll just leave that at that. And I hate mornings.
How many times have you done an overnight feed?
Okay, so we discussed this the other night, actually, and... So Bianca was huge on breastfeeding, which is another, obviously, a topic that's...
Maxie said the same thing. Yeah. He hasn't done any overnight feeds.
Well, because she's breastfeeding, there isn't a lot you can do. And I will hand on heart say, like, early days, I used to get up and I'd end up just, like, getting up with her. And she'd say, she's just going to go to bed. And I'd lay down in, like, we had a nursery and we'd just lay down and either talk or fall back asleep.
Yeah.
Just, like, go to bed. So after a while, it just became, like... Stop it.
That's one big thing with being a dad. A lot of my mates say you're trying to work out where you fit in early days because all they want is their mum. Yeah, so it's trying to work out what you can do to just.
But then I've got friends who didn't want to breastfeed. They wanted to go to the bottle.
Okay.
So you know the husband was doing a lot because he could.
Yeah.
Which is I get.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And
why does it take you so long to put Evie to bed?
It's actually a funny one.
Yeah.
So we, you know, Evie, when she turned three, we got her a big girl bed. So she's got like a king single bed, right? And it's really comfy. It's like the comfiest bed in the house. So I'll take her. And then we get in there. We always read books before bed. It's a bit of a ritual. Kids love books before bed. So we get in there, read a couple of books, and then I'm out. Like I just end up falling asleep for half an hour. And it's probably not a funny story, but I, just the other month, it was Bianca's birthday, and I took Evie to bed and fell asleep.
Oh.
but we'd had a barbecue earlier on, and I'd had a few drinks under my belt, and I was a bit tired.
You do get very tired when you've had a few drinks, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I do. But I tend to go. Bianca doesn't mind it usually, just not on her birthday.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming in and chatting, Scotty. Now, I've got something from Bianca.
Yes.
She's written this about why you're a good dad.
Oh, God.
So here we go. I normally ask for a paragraph. She sent me about three pages here, so let me get through this here.
That'd be right.
He's a very super loving and caring, and he's really just a big kid himself. He connects with them on their level, bringing humour, funny voices, and silliness every day. From silly dance moves to characters' voices, made up poo-poo butt songs and chasing around the kitchen. The kids absolutely adore him. He's got an amazing way of teaching them things that are so encouraging and supporting. He is so patient with the kids and doesn't just give them the answer to things but explains how and why things work. Even simple things like a 100-piece world puzzle, he'll just sit there with Evie for an hour just slowly doing it and talking to and explaining all the parts around the world. He has a lot of patience, which I don't have. He's the best dad.
Ah, that's nice. Geez, I thought it was going to be a little bit different.
Now what Scotty's going to do is he's going to sing us out to the poo-poo butt song.
Actually, don't know what
that's all right. Thanks for popping in, Scotty.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Bye.